Osho, The Grass Grows by Itself. Talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 6.
Bhagwan, during 3 years of severe training under the great master Gizan, Koshu was unable to gain Satori. At the beginning of a special 7-day session of discipline, he thought his chance had finally come. He climbed the tower of the temple gate, and going up to the Arhat images, he made this vow: "Either I realize my dreams up here, or they'll find my dead body at the foot of this tower." He went without food or sleep, giving himself up to constant zazen, often crying out things like, "What was my karma in spite of all these efforts? I can't grasp the way." At last he admitted failure, and determined to end it all, he went to the railing and slowly lifted his leg over it. At that very instant, he had an awakening. Overjoyed, he rushed down the stairs and through the rain to Gizan's room. Before he had a chance to speak, the master cried, "Bravo! You finally had your day."
Man is the only animal who can think, try, or commit suicide. Suicide is very special. It is human. Animals live, they die, but they cannot commit suicide. They live, but there are not any problems. Life doesn't create any angst, anguish. Life is not an anxiety for them. They simply live it. And then, as simply they live, similar way, simply they die. Animals don't have any death consciousness. In fact, they are neither aware of life nor of death. So the question of suicide doesn't arise. They are not conscious at all. They live in the deepest sleep of the unconscious. Only man can commit suicide. That means only man can do something about life or death. That means only man can stand against life. This possibility is there because man is conscious. But remember, the problems of life, the anxiety, the tension, the anguish, are the final decision to commit suicide, does not come out of consciousness. They come out of fragmentary consciousness. This has to be understood deeply. A Buddha is also conscious, but he cannot commit suicide. cannot even think about it. The suicide doesn't exist for a Buddha. He is also conscious. Why? Animals are unconscious totally. Buddha is conscious totally. With total consciousness there is no problem, or total unconsciousness there is no problem. In fact, to be total in any way is to be beyond problems. A man is fragmentarily conscious. A part of him has become conscious. That creates the whole problem. The remaining, the greater part, remains unconscious. Man has become two. One part is conscious, the remaining whole is unconscious. A discontinuity has happened in man. He is not one whole. He is not one piece. He is double. The dual has come in. He is just like an iceberg floating in the ocean. One tenth is out of the water, 9/10 is hidden underneath. The same is the proportion of human consciousness and unconsciousness. 1/10 of consciousness has become conscious. 9/10 of your consciousness is still in the unconscious. Just the top layer is conscious, and the whole being remains underneath in deep darkness. Of course, there are going to be problems because the conflict has arisen in the being. You have become two. And the conscious part is so small that it is almost impotent. It can talk. It is very articulate. It can think. But when the moment comes to do something, it is the unconscious which is needed, because the unconscious has the energy to do a thing. You can decide that you will not be angry again. But this decision comes from the important part of the mind, which is conscious, which can see that anger is futile, harmful, poisonous, which can see the whole situation and decide. But the decision has no power behind it, because all power belongs to the whole, which is still unconscious. This part decides, I will not be angry again. It is okay, until the situation arises. When the situation arises, the conscious is pushed aside and the unconscious surfaces. It is vital. It is forceful. It has energy. Suddenly you are overpowered. The conscious may try a little while, but it is useless. Against the tide, it is nothing. When the unconscious becomes a tide and comes to take a situation, you are purchased. You are no more yourself as you knew yourself to be. Your ego is thrown off gear. All your decisions taken by the conscious are simply insignificant. The unconscious does things again. When the situation has gone, the unconscious recedes back. The conscious comes on the throne. The conscious comes on the throne only when the unconscious is not there. It is like a servant. When the emperor is not there, the servant sits on the throne. Orders Of course, nobody is there to listen to him. He is alone. When the emperor comes, the servant simply has to leave the throne and listen to the emperor. The bigger part of you always remains the emperor. The lesser part remains like a servant. Then much conflict arises, because the part that decides cannot act, and the part that acts cannot decide. The part that sees things can think about them, has no energy, and the part that cannot see is completely blind, has all the energy. In animals, there are not two parts, only the unconscious exists. With no thinking, it acts. There is no problem because there is no inner conflict. In a Buddha also, the same has happened from the other end. The whole has become conscious. This is the meaning of enlightenment, satori, samadhi. You have again become one like an animal, one piece. Now, whatsoever Buddha decides, automatically it happens, because there is nobody against it, nobody unaware of it. There is no other in the house. Buddha alone lives in the house. So Buddha need not struggle. He sees the situation, he decides and acts. In fact, decision and action are not two in a Buddha. Decision is the act. He simply sees that anger is useless. Anger disappears. There is no effort to bring it into, impose it, force it. A Buddha remains loose and natural. He can afford. You cannot afford to be loose and natural. Because the moment you are loose and natural, the unconscious comes in. You have to go on controlling yourself. And the more you control, the more artificial you become. A civilized human being is a plastic flower. He has no vitality, no energy. And when there is no energy, there is no delight. One of the greatest English poets, William Blake, has a beautiful line about it, very deep inside. He says, energy is delight. There is no other delight. The very vitality, the very energy of being is delight, is bliss. Only impotence is misery. Weakness is misery. And duality creates impotence. And whatsoever is small energy is left after you are divided into, that too goes as a wastage in the inner conflict. You are continuously fighting inside, continuously suppressing something, continuously trying to force something else. Anger comes and you would like to be non-angry. Greed comes and you would like to be greedless. Possession comes and you would like to be non-possessive. Violence comes and you would like to be non-violent. Cruelty is there and you go on imposing compassion. And much turmoil, and you would like to be serene and silent. Something goes on inside, and something else you go on imposing on it. Continuous fight dissipates the remaining energy. And this is going to be so unless you become one again. And there are two ways to become one. Either fall back to the animal or rise up to the Buddha. Of course, falling back is easier. Effort will not be needed. You can simply slip back. It is downhill. No effort. Going up is difficult. Hence, millions of people choose the downhill way. What is the downhill way as far as consciousness is concerned? Drugs, alcohol, sex is the downhill way. In a deep sexual act, you again become an animal. You are no more human. The gap is bridged. In a deep sexual orgasm, the duality disappears. The controller is no more there. In a deep sexual act, your whole starts functioning as a whole. Mind is no more there. Ego is no more there. The controller and the control is no more there, because the sexual act is non-voluntary. Your will is not needed. Your will is not required. You are no more a will. The will is surrendered. Suddenly, you are back to the world, the animal world, the natural world. Again you have entered into the Garden of Eden. Again you are a Adam or Eve, no more a civilized human being. That's why all societies condemn sex. They are afraid of it. It is a back door to the Garden of Eden. All civilizations are afraid of sex. The fear comes because once you know an uncontrolled existence, then you would not like control at all. You can become a rebel. You can throw all the rules and regulations to the winds. You can throw Confucius to the dust. Again, you can become an animal. Civilization is afraid of it. So, sex is allowed, because if it is not allowed, then too it will create trouble. If it is not allowed, and it is such a deep-rooted instinct in the very biology, in the very physiology of you, in the very deeper chemistry, that if it is not allowed, that will create perversion. You may go mad. So society allows it in mild homeopathic doses. That is the meaning of marriage. Marriage is a mild homeopathic dose, controlled in a certain way. You are allowed a little window out of the society, but the society still manages the outer control. Marriage is love plus law. That plus law is the control around it. If love is allowed without any law, the fear is man will fall again into an animal world. And the fear seems to be true. The fear has meaning. Man can fall through love. Because man can rise through love, man can also fall through it. The ladder is always the same, whether you go up or you go down. Love can rise to such heights that Jesus can say love is God, and love can fall to such depths that the society is constantly on watch. The police is always around, the magistrate is sitting there. Love is not a freedom. Why in love men can fall so deep? Because in love the control is lost, the chasm is bridged, you become one piece again, but you regress to the animal world. Love can also lead you to the divine, but then love has to be very, very meditative. Then love has to be love plus meditation. That is what tantra is. Love plus meditation. You move into love, you allow your whole being total freedom, but still deep at the center you remain a witness. If the witness is lost, you are going downhill. If the witness remains there, then love, the same ladder, can lead you to the very ultimate heaven. Alcohol. All societies have been against, but still they have to allow it, because they know that without alcohol there will be so much chaos. Alcohol has to be allowed in mild doses, legal. Legally it has to be allowed. Why? Because it soothes people. It is a tranquilizer. And people are in such an inner anguish, they need something to soothe them. Otherwise they will simply go berserk. They will simply go mad. So no society can afford freedom about alcohol, and no society can prohibit it completely. That is not possible. Either way, it will be difficult to manage. Alcohol is a need. It is a need because the tension is so much inside. You will go mad because of the tension. And then there have crept many types of drugs. And it is not for the first time. It has been always so. From the Soma of Rig Veda to LSD 25. It has always been so. Again and again drugs pop up. Again they have to be pushed, crushed. The society tries to forget them. Again they come back. There seems to be a deep need. And the need is here. The bridge is needed between conscious and unconscious. Unless a man becomes sincerely meditative, drugs will be needed. Unless you go upwards, you will have to fall downwards. And you cannot remain static. This is one of the deeper laws of existence, that nobody can remain static. Either he has to go up or he has to fall down, because life knows no rest. It knows only movement. Either you go forward or you will be thrown backward. But you cannot say that I will stick to my state. I will not go back, I will not go up. No, that is not possible. If you are not going up, you are already falling down. You may know it, you may not know it. Only a meditative society can be free of alcohol and other drugs and other chemical ways to bridge the gap. If you can bridge the gap through being more alert That's why so much emphasis is on being alert, aware, witnessing, watchfulness. Why? Because the more you become alert, the more of the unconscious becomes conscious. That is the only way. If you remain more alert, if you walk with awareness, if you talk, listen with awareness, if you eat, take your bath with awareness, not like a robot, not walking in sleep and doing things, or doing things and thinking other things, that too is a sort of sleep. No, conscious, mindful. If you do your things, chunks of the unconscious are being transformed into consciousness. And by, more and more of your iceberg comes out of the water of darkness, out of the ocean. When the whole of you is out of darkness, this is samadhi. This is enlightenment. This is the state of a Buddha or Arhat, one who has no more any unconsciousness in him, one who has no more any dark corners within his being. The whole house is like it. Now, you have attained to a unity. You are crystallized. Again, like the animal, you have a unity on a higher plane. So a Buddha is pure like an animal, simple like an animal, innocent like an animal, but not like an animal at all. The animal has its innocence because of ignorance. And Buddha has his innocence because of his enlightened awareness. The cause has changed. This is the first thing before we enter in this story. The second thing. A man comes to a point where he starts feeling that suicide is the only way to get out of this all mess. This point comes to everybody's life. When you are totally fed up with the struggle, when you are totally bored with the whole effort of being. Remember, just like suicide, boredom is also very special, it is also human. No animal is ever bored. Look at a buffalo. Chewing the grass, the same grass, every day. Sitting and chewing and chewing. Never bored. You may get bored looking at her. She is not bored. No animal is ever bored. You cannot bore an animal. Too thick, too dense mind. How can you bore? For boredom, very, very high sensitivity is needed. Higher sensitivity. And higher will be your boredom, more will be your boredom. Children are not bored. They still belong more to the animal world than to the human. They are human animals still, enjoying simple things. They are not bored. Every day they can go for hunting butterflies, and they will never be bored, and every day they are ready. Have you ever talked to children, told them stories, the same story, and they will say, tell it again. And you tell it again, and they will say, tell it again. You cannot bore children. You cannot bore animals. Boredom is also human, a very great quality in fact, because it adjusts only on a higher plane of consciousness when one is very sensitive. One feels boredom. Life seems meaningless. There seems to be no purpose in it. One feels as if it is just an accident. Whether you are here or not makes no difference. This moment comes when one is so utterly bored, then one starts thinking of committing suicide. What is this suicide? It is simply dropping out. It is just saying that enough is enough. I don't want to play the game again. I want to drop out of the whole game. Unless this point is reached, religion is not possible. Because only from this point, either you commit suicide or you transform yourself. Here is the crossroads. So this has been my observation, that people who become prematurely religious simply waste their time. To become prematurely religious means to become religious without really being fed up with life, not yet really bored. The game still has some attraction. It may be sex, it may be money, it may be politics, power. Something in the life has still attraction. Then, prematurely you have become religious. And this will not help. You will simply waste your time. One has to be utterly bored. Life has no more any attraction. All the dreams are settled. All the rainbows disappeared. There are no more any flowers, only thorns. You are saturated with it. There is no effort on your part to leave it or renounce it. Remember, because if there is any effort to renounce it, that means there was a little attraction left. Otherwise, what is the effort? When you are fed up with a thing, do you renounce it? No, there is no need to renounce. It is already renounced. If you escape to the forest, from whom you are escaping? From some attractions lingering in the world. Otherwise, why? Where are you escaping and why? Even in escape, you are showing that you are attached to something. Even in escape, you are showing that you are attached to something. Remember this, this is the rule. From wherever you escape, there is your attraction. If you escape from woman, woman is your attraction. If you escape from politics, politics is your attraction. And the faster you run, the greater is the attraction. And this is a premature thing, you will be called back. Go to the Himalayas, but you will think that you have been chosen a president of a country. You will dream, sitting in the Himalayas in a lonely cave, and you will find many apsaras, beautiful women coming from the heavens. They are your mind child. Nobody is sending beautiful women to you. It is from women you have escaped. Premature. There is no renunciation in a premature mind. Maturity is needed, and maturity means you have lived life, known it to the very depth of it, and found it lacking, that there is nothing in it. The journey is complete. You can live in the market or you go to the monastery, doesn't matter. It is all the same. The life is no more attraction wherever you are. Makes no difference. This point is the point of suicide, and this point is the point of sannyas. Suicide or sannyas, this is the alternative. And unless your sannyas is an alternative to suicide, it is not much significant. And this is the point where you can feel the difference between a religious mind and a secular mind. A secular mind has no alternative. When he is bored with life, only suicide is the way. There is no alternative to it. An atheist, what he will do when he is fed up with life? He can commit suicide. That's why in the West more suicide is committed. That's why more men commit suicide than women. Almost double is the number. Because men are more atheistic than women, less religious than women. In the East, less and less suicide is committed. In the West, more and more. The westwards you go and you move into the hemisphere of suicide. Great thinkers, philosophers, logicians commit more suicide than ordinary people. Because thinking implies doubt. And the man who doubts, in fact, becomes a believer in atheism. You cannot remain in doubt, because doubt is empty. You have to cling to some belief, either in God or no God, either in the possibility of a future life or no possibility of a future life, either in the meaning, a transcendental meaning, to higher planes or no higher planes. But you have to decide. You cannot remain in doubt. I have never seen anybody who lives in doubt. He may call it that he is a skeptic. No, his skepticism is his belief. He may call himself that I am an atheist. I don't believe in God, but he believes in his non-belief. And he believes as arrogantly as any theist. And he is ready to defend his belief as any theist is ready to argue, to prove. Nobody can live in doubt. So there are two types of minds, secular and religious. It will be good to understand the difference. A secular mind believes in whatsoever is apparent, whatsoever he can see, touch. A religious mind believes not only in the apparent, but in the transcendental. The religious mind is one who says that eyes cannot exhaust reality. Reality is more than eyes can see. Hands cannot clasp all that is. Reality is more. Ears cannot hear all that is. Reality is more. A religious mind says that whatsoever you know is only a part. There is beyond. This life is not all. There are more to life. there is more openings. A secular mind is a closed mind. A religious mind is an open mind, always ready to move, always ready to probe, always ready to inquire, always ready to travel to the unknown. If you are a secular mind, then when you get fed up with life, and you have lived all that life can give, and you found it useless, futile, at the most a toy to be engaged with it, occupied with it. But how long you can be occupied with a toy? A moment comes, a moment of maturity, when the toy has to be thrown. Then there is nothing. This life was all. Now the life has flopped. You can commit suicide, nothing else is there for you. Only at the moment of suicide one comes to know the beautiful world of religion. And what is the meaning of religion only is realized then. Because this life is finished, but there is more life. This world finished, but universe is vast. This dimension is finished, but there are millions of dimensions. Layers and layers and layers of being and existence. There is no end to it. This open mind is the religious mind. And this vastness of possibilities is what is meant by God. God is infinite possibility that you can grow. One direction is finished, another direction opens. In fact, whenever a door is closed, another opens immediately. At this moment of suicide, one stands at a crossroads. Either destroy yourself or create yourself in a new way. The old is no more of any meaning. Either destroy yourself completely, that is suicide, or create yourself in a totally new way, so you enter a new world and a new life and a new love. Secular mind is simply destructive. A religious mind is creative. The religious mind says that when a world has finished, it's so simply that the way you lived, the very base of your life is finished, nothing else. You can live in another way. Another style of being is possible. Create anew. Up to now you have lived as a body. Now you can live as a soul. Up to now you have lived in a material way. Now you can live in a spiritual way. Up to now you have lived with greed and anger and sex, jealousy, possessiveness. Now live in a different way, non-possessive, in compassion. Up to now, you lived greed as your base. Now live as a sharing. Your whole being sharing with others. Up to now, you lived with thinking and thought, and it failed. Now live as meditation, as ecstasy. Up to now you were moving outer and outer and outer. Now turn back. This is the meaning of conversion. Turn back. Move towards the source. The outer has finished, the inner is there. now move inwards. A new being arises. Hindus have called this point the point of being reborn. One birth is given by the parents, that's the birth in the physical world. Another birth is given by yourself, that is the birth, the real birth of your being. Hindus call this rebirth, and the man who has attained to it, they have a particular name for it. They call him Dvij, twice born. Out of his own womb, now he gives a new birth to himself. A new dimension opens, the dimension of meaning, of significance, of eternal significance. But it happens only when you have come to such a bored state of being that you would like to commit suicide. Now, we will enter in this beautiful Zen story. During three years of severe training, under the great master Gizan, Kosu was unable to gain Satori. Satori is Samadhi, the first Samadhi, the very entrance into Samadhi, another world, totally unknown to you, totally unimagined by you, not even dreamed by you. And that world exists just by the side of this world. In fact, you have not to even move a single step. Just by the side of this world, just in it, it exists. Only your viewpoint has to change. Suddenly, when you have a new viewpoint to look at the same world, another is revealed. The world is your viewpoint, nothing else. This world is ugly because your viewpoint is wrong. This world is just an anguish, a hell. It is because your viewpoint is wrong. It is not, in fact, the world which is a hell. It is you who create hell around it. It is your projection. The world is neutral. It is like a film screen. Clean, white, plain, pure. And then it depends what you project on it. You can project hell, you can project heaven, or you may drop all projections. That is what moksha is. Not projecting anything is the ultimate liberation. 3 years of severe training under the great master Gizan, Kosu was unable to gain Satori. Something has to be understood here. If you don't make any effort, you will never attain. But you can make too much effort also and miss. Sometimes you can overdo. And this is a very, very delicate matter. How to balance just in the middle. It is easy not to do anything. It is also easy to overdo a thing. The difficult thing is just to be in the middle, in the right proportion. For the ego, extremes are easy. Not to do anything is very easy. Then to do it too much is also easy. People come to me whose bodies have become too much filled with fat, and they ask me what to do. Should we go on a fast? And I know Either they can eat too much obsessively or they can go on fast. Both are easy. But if you tell them that just cut your intake to half, that is difficult. They can starve themselves. That is not very difficult. Easy. They can stuff themselves too much, that too easy. Because in both the cases, they are doing harm to the body. The quality of their murderous attitude towards the body remains the same. They can overstuff it, this is a sort of murder, violence. Then they can do another type of violence, they can go on a fast. Both are extremes and both are wrong. Extreme is always wrong. To remain in the middle is always right. This Kosu must have overdone. And it happens always. When you come to a master, you become so infatuated. When you are near a master, you are so much attracted by his being that you would like to take a jump, that you would like to become like him, that you would like to do anything. Your activity becomes feverish. You are in too much of a hurry. Kosu must have done too much. Otherwise, a master like Gizan, you can simply sit by his side and the satori can happen. Why 3 years of effort and still he is missing? He has overdone it. Now, when you overdo a certain thing, anxiety is created. When you overdo a certain thing, inner turmoil is created. You are unbalanced. You cannot be at peace. And satori happens only when you are at home. In fact, satori happens only when you are really relaxed. Do only that much which helps relaxation. Don't overdo it. And one has to feel his own way, because no fixed formula can be given, because it differs and depends. Each person has to find his own balance. By and by, one becomes aware what is balance. Balance is a state of mind where you are silent. No exertion on it, this way or that. When you are lethargic and don't do much, then your energy becomes a turmoil. Because too much energy inside will create restlessness. And children, they are restless. That is too much energy coming into their being and they don't know what to do, where to throw it. If you are lethargic, you will have too much energy creating turmoil. Your own energy will become your enemy. Or if you become too much active, too much, and you do a certain thing so much that it drains your energy out, you feel drained, tired, then again you will be restless. Because you need a certain level of energy inside. Either too much energy will create restlessness, or too much drained, you will feel restless. And with a master it almost always happens. He has a magnetic center in him. You become infatuated. It is like a love affair. you fall in love, and then a fever arises. Love is a sort of fever. The temperature goes high. This must have happened to Kosu. And after 3 years, nothing happened. At the beginning of a special 7-day session of discipline, he thought his chance had finally come. Every year, or every 6 months, or every 3 months, they have a special 7-day discipline in Zen monasteries called Sesshin. In these 7 days, one has to do nothing but to meditate. The whole energy has to be brought to it. For 7 days continuously, only for taking food, that too very small, and for 2-3 hours sleep in the night, that's all. The remaining 20 hours one has to meditate and meditate. One has to sit for even 6 hours continuously in a meditative posture and meditate. And when one feels completely tired and one cannot sit anymore or is sleepy, then one has to walk and meditate. And in the whole 7-day session, the master is around you with his staff. Because when you meditate for 3-4 hours, even half an hour is enough, and one starts feeling sleepy, he hits on the head with the staff. Whosoever is feeling sleepy will be hit immediately and brought back. 7 days, very strenuous effort. That helps lethargic people. But this Kosu must be totally the opposite. A Sesshin won't help him. A special effort won't help him. He has been doing that already for 3 years. In fact, he needed a different type of special meditation for 7 days relaxation. It has not existed in Zen discipline. It has to, because there are two types of people, the lethargic and the overactive. For lethargic people, it is good. But they are 99%. That's why for the 1%, nobody has bothered. For lethargic people, it is good that for a few days, they should try their utmost. But the 1% who has been already doing too much, for him, this session will not be of any help. But at the beginning of a special 7-day session of discipline, he thought his chance had finally come. Now he will be doing all that he can do. Almost 24 hours he will be meditating. Now the Satori cannot escape his grasp. He climbed the tower of the temple gate, and going up to the Buddha image, the Arhat image, he made this vow: either I realize my dreams up here, or they will find my dead body at the foot of this tower. Now he wants to bring his total energy to it. And he is sincere. He is serious. He really wants to have Satori, even if life has to be paid for it, he is ready. Either I realize my dreams up here, he said in the tower, before the Buddha image, or they will find my dead body at the foot of this tower. I will commit suicide. This is the point. A very rare point in life, when you are ready to give so much, when you are really sincere, then suicide or samadhi. This is the only alternative. He went without food or sleep. For 7 days, he didn't take any food. He didn't slept, giving himself up to constant zazen, often crying out things like this. Zazen is sitting silently, just in a Buddha posture, not doing anything, simply being aware. No food, no sleep, just sitting for 24 hours. He is doing his best, the last that he can do, the utmost. Often crying out things like this, what was my karma, that in spite of all these efforts, I can't grasp the way. This moment comes to every seeker. When he feels that he is doing all that he can do, nothing more is possible. And what is my karma, that in spite of all these efforts, I can't grasp the way? But in fact, he can't grasp the way because of these efforts. Not in spite of. Because of them. First, lethargy is the problem. To bring you out of your lethargy. And then second, the problem is how to help you to remain in the middle and not to move to the opposite end, the hyperactivity. To remain balanced. He has overdone it. But that helped in a different way. Through it, Satori never reached. Through it, he couldn't realize. At last, he admitted failure and determined to end it all, because now nothing is there. All that he could do, he has done. More he cannot do, more is not there to be done. So now there is no hope. For what to wait now? At last, he admitted failure. This failure is not ordinary failure. It is not a failure amid many failures. It is the failure. When you fail in one thing, that doesn't make any difference, because there are many others you will succeed. When you fail in one effort, you know that you can make another effort. But this is the failure, because he has done whatsoever he could do. More cannot be done. And there is nothing else. With life he is already finished. Now he has no more debts with life. That game is completely over. And he has done everything that he could think and do. He accepted the failure. Satori has not happened. And determined to end it all. So now only suicide is the possibility. Samadhi is not there for me. Only suicide I can commit. Went to the railing and slowly lifted his leg over it. At that very instant he had an awakening. The Satori happened. A vast sky of samadhi opened immediately. It has to be understood, because it may be the same for you. And this is not only one case. In many cases it has been so. When you are a failure, total failure, many things happen within you. One, the ego is evaporated. Even in zazen, sitting silently for 7 days without food, without sleep, the ego was there. In fact, who is asking for samadhi? Who is there who asks that samadhi should happen? This is the last effort of the ego. The ego wants to grasp it, and that is the barrier. When he accepted failure, the ego dissolved, because the ego exists only with success. Success is the food, the very strength the ego lives on. If you are really a failure, complete failure, how can the ego remain there? The ego cannot exist in an ultimate failure. The ego disappears, and with ego, lethargy and hyperactivity, too much activity, both disappeared. Without ego, you are in the balance. Suddenly, everything fits and you are in the balance. Without ego, there is no extreme. Cannot exist. Extreme exists as an ego effort. Suddenly, ego is not there and you are in the middle. And now, the very effort of society is very, very balanced. At last he admitted failure and determined to end it all, went to the railing and slowly lifted his leg over it. Why slowly? Now, society is not really something he is going to do. Suicide is something that is happening to him. Finished with the world, there is no hurry also. Because he is not going to go anywhere, simply dropping out of existence. There is no hurry. Silently, slowly, he came to the railing. This is really a beautiful moment, very deep. Because you can commit suicide, and already this suicide is different. You can commit suicide in a very, very hyper tension. That's how people commit suicide. In a hyper tension. If they are delayed even for a single moment, they will not commit. It has to be committed when you are completely mad. It has to be complete. Done when really you are so tense that you don't know what you are doing. So if you can delay suicide even for a single moment, it will never happen. I had a friend. He was in love with a woman, and the woman rejected him. So of course, being a poet, he thought of committing suicide. His family was very much disturbed. They all tried to convince him. But the more they tried, the more he became convinced that I am to commit. This happens. Not knowing what to do, they locked his door. He started beating his head against the door. They became very much afraid what to do. Suddenly they remembered me, called me. I went there. He was beating his head against the door. He was really in a fury and completely determined. I went near the door and I told him that why you are making so much so out of it? If you want to commit suicide, commit. But why so much noise? And why you are beating your head? Just by beating your head on the door, you will not die. So listen to me, come with me. We can go to the river. And there is a beautiful point. I have always meditated, if ever I am to commit suicide, this is the place. You come with me. This is a good chance. Because I was not saying anything against suicide, he calmed down. He was not hitting his head. He was really puzzled. Because you never expect from a friend that he will help you to commit suicide. So I told him, you open the door and don't make a fool yourself and don't help crowds to gather here. Why so much showmanship about it? You simply come with me and drop in the river. And there is a waterfall in the river and simply you will disappear. So he opened the door, he looked at me, he was very puzzled. I took his hand, brought him home. He said, when we are going, but he was a little afraid. Now that I was ready, I was dangerous. So I said, this is a full moon night and there is no hurry. When one wants to die, one should choose an auspicious moment. So we go in the mid of the night and the full moon will be just there. And I can say you goodbye and you jump. He became more and more afraid. And I was simply delaying the time. We went at 10 o'clock to bed. I fixed the alarm for 12. And I told him that sometimes I don't hear the alarm, so if you hear first, you wake me. Immediately the alarm started, he put it off. I waited for a few minutes, then I said, why you are waiting? Wake me. He became suddenly angry and said, you are my friend, I am my enemy. It seems you want to kill me. No, I said, I'm not taking any judgment on my own. If you want to die, I'm a friend. I have to cooperate and help. If you don't want to die, that's your decision. So you tell me. I'm neutral. The car is ready. I will drive you to the spot. And the night is beautiful and the moon has come. Now it is up to you. He said, take me to my home. And I am not going to die. And who are you to force me to die? I am not forcing anybody. Just a delayed moment. And you come to your senses. This is not that type of suicide. I must tell you, by the way, that there is only one religion in the world, Jainism, which allows suicide. It is rare. Only Mahavir allows suicide. He says, if you can die very silently, without any emotionality about it, it is beautiful. Nothing is wrong in it. But it has to be done on a very long time. Because you never know. So you have to stop taking food. That's all. It takes almost 3 months for a person to die without food. For 3 months the body goes on and on using its reservoir. Energy and food and everything. One goes on becoming more and more skinny, and the flesh disappears, then only the skeleton remains near about 3 months it takes. So Mahavir says, if you want to die, and if this suicide is going to be a religious dropping out, then don't do it in a hurry. You do it simply because you have 3 months to think. And you can go back. Nobody is forcing you. And there have been many people who have done that way. In the past, many people have dropped out of existence, not taking food for 3 months, simply meditating, lying down. Then that society also is more dutiful than your ordinary life. Because they are not really killing themselves, they are moving to another realm. This Kosu is slowly moved. No hurry there is. In fact, when life doesn't mean to you, death also doesn't mean anything to you. When life is useless, death is also useless. Because death is nothing but the culmination of life. Death means so much to you because life means so much to you. It is always in the same proportion. If life is very, very meaningful to you, you will be afraid of death. When life is meaningless, of course death is also meaningless. There is no hurry. He came to the rally, went to the rally, he slowly lifted his leg over it. At that moment, you just visualize the picture. A Buddhist monk is standing on a tower, is slowly lifting his feet, and suddenly there is all that he always wanted to be. The satori has happened, like a lightning. What happened in that moment? Slowly lifting the leg up to commit suicide. Life is completely finished. There is no greed in the mind, not even for satori. There is no ego in the mind, not even for religious achievement. The future has completely dropped because it exists only with desires. Desire is future. Longing is future. Only one longing has remained there inside him, for satori. And that longing was creating future and time. And that longing was the last barrier. The last barrier has dropped. There is no future, no desire. Only this moment exists. At the moment when Kosu lifted his leg slowly, all time stopped. No past, no future. No past because life has been realized as useless. No future because no longing even for satori. That leg lifted up, time stopped. That leg lifted up, mind stopped. Because nothing to achieve, nothing to think. At that moment, he crossed out of time. At that moment, he transcended time. At that moment, his being became vertical. No more horizontal, no more past, no more future, all the waste disappeared. At that moment, lifted. Not only he lifted his leg, his whole being is lifted up. The vertical dimension has started. And suddenly, there is Satori. Suddenly, at that very instant, he had an awakening. It always happens so. It happened the same way to Buddha himself. He left the world, the palace, the beautiful wife, the newly born child, the whole empire. The world was no more meaningful. Then for 6 years he tried and tried and tried to his utmost. He went to every teacher, to every master that he came to know about. And he said, I am ready to do whatsoever, but I want to know what life is. Who I am. And the masters, many masters in these 6 years, told him to do many things, and he did them. And he did them so perfectly that no master could tell him that it is not happening because you are not doing well. That was impossible. Even the master was not so perfect as the disciple. So masters accepted their failure, and they said that up to this moment, up to this extent we can help, beyond this we ourselves don't know, so you seek another master. Then all the masters finished. Then he started doing things on his own, and he did everything that in India was prevalent for centuries. He tried all methods of Hatha Yoga, Raj Yoga. He did everything that was available. He overdid it. He was too anxious to achieve. He was too serious about it. His sincerity became a hypertension inside. And he couldn't attain. Then one day, crossing the Niranjana river near Bodh Gaya, he was so weak because of fasting that he couldn't cross it. It is a very small stream. He couldn't swim it. And he had to hang with the root of a tree to save his life. He was so weak. In that moment he thought, what I have done. I have destroyed my body and I have not attained to any soul. This whole effort has been foolish. At that moment he dropped all efforts. The world was already useless now. The religious world of efforts was also useless. At that day, he relaxed under a tree, which became the Bodhi tree, under which he attained his enlightenment. He relaxed. That relaxation was total. For the first time, there was nothing to achieve. The achieving mind dropped. He has done everything and nothing can be done. So what to do? He simply slept. That night there was no dream. Because when there is no desire, there is no dream. Dreams are the shadows of desires. Dreams are desires which go on haunting you even in your sleep. The whole night passed as if it was a single moment. And by the morning, early morning, when the last star was disappearing, he opened his eyes, looked at the star. And he was in the same situation like Kosu. When Kosu lifted his leg and was going to drop himself from the tower. The disappearing last star, and he opened his eyes with no mind inside, with no desire. Time stopped. And suddenly, it was there. His longing was the barrier. So, one has to long first, and one has to strive, and one has to make all the efforts, and one has to roam and seek and inquire, and one has to do whatsoever one can do, and then one has to drop all. You cannot drop it right now, because you have nothing to drop. First you have to do, then you can drop. You can go to a tower, and you can raise your leg very, very slowly. Nothing will happen. Because it is not a question of the outer posture, the inner. You have not yet done all that has to be done. You can go to a Bodhi tree and lie down completely relaxed. And in the morning, exactly when the last star is disappearing, you can open your eyes, nothing will happen. Because one has to pass through arduous effort to come to a total relaxation. Then suddenly it happens. In fact, it has been always there around you, only you were not there. You were not present. You were moving in the mind, in the desires, in the future, in the past, in the memories, in the thoughts. You were too much attached to clouds, that's why you couldn't see the sky. It was always there. In fact, the clouds were roaming in the sky. Samadhi is all around you. Samadhi is the ocean, and you are the fish. But you are not present. Overjoyed, he rushed down the stairs and threw the rein to Gizan's room. Before he had a chance to speak, the master cried, "Bravo! You have finally had your day." Because the very quality of the person who has attained to Satori changes. He need not say, at least to the master. He did not say that I have achieved. Because the very vibration, the very being of one who has achieved is totally different. Even before he could say anything, the master says, "Bravo. So you have achieved. So it has happened. There is no need to talk about it. Once it happens, those who know, they will see it. Even those who don't know, they will start to feel it. You cannot come to a man of realization without feeling something of the unknown, without listening to his footsteps in the world of the unknown, in the world of the mysterious. Mystery surrounds him in his very shadow. A very sacred quality exists in his very movement. There is a holiness because he is whole. Satori makes you whole, Samadhi makes you whole. Now there is no more the division between conscious and unconscious. Suddenly it is bridged. The whole has become conscious. The quality is just like this. You see a house in night with no light within the house. Then somebody lights a lamp inside. the whole quality of the house changes. Even passerby on the road suddenly will see that the light is burning in the house. The quality has changed from the windows, from the doors, from the creaks. The light is falling even outside. The house is no more dark. Enough for today.